This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician. Jimmy hit Austin. My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. This is Phil Pritchett on the P2 Podcast. It's that time of the week, everyone, where your musical life gets put into perspective, drawn into focus as you float adrift in the fog on the high seas, looking for that point of reference, sifting through endless MySpace pages and iTunes and, oh gosh, sifting through vinyl till your fingers are sore, being subjected to a Facebook spam of every band of every stripe in the world, and think, where does it all mean? Where do I turn for some direction, some guidance to music, old, new, and the struggles for a person like maybe yourself who writes songs or, you know, records on GarageBand and in the late hours in his home? Well, let me tell you what, folks, this is your bastion of understanding right here, the P2 Podcast. Welcome. It's Phil here, coming to you from Trinidad World Recording in Fort Worth, Texas, my studio here in Fort Worth. Well, man, it's very exciting. We have a new guest here today, my good friend, a legendary rocker of Dallas, Texas. We go way back. We played a show at Woody's the other night. Hadn't seen each other in a while. I said, man, you got to come over to the podcast. A man of opinions, a man who has traveled this country of ours, rocking and drinking and just kicking ass from coast to coast. He is from Macon, Grayson, the legendary great rock band, one of my favorites. Buddy Huffman is here.
Oh, Phil.
Hello, yeah. Buddy.
What's up? You're way too kind.
Was that a good intro?
I tried to
build up the intro there. Was that good?
I was expecting like John Mellencamp to be. Yeah. That's not me. That was a beautiful intro. I was not expecting me, but thank you.
We try to add some drama, some you know, but there's no drama to it. None of that is untrue. It's all very true.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. No, we've been friends a while. We've played some shows over the years. We've shared agents. We've had much
shows.
Fun.
Well, I got to know Buddy. It was back, I guess, the early aughts.
The early aughts.
The early aughts. My manager / booking agent / road guy, the great Troy Johnson. The great Troy Johnson, who was a booking agent with he was in it by himself for a while, bounced around a lot. He was, what was that guy's name in Nashville he booked for a while? Used to book Ingram. God, I can't remember his name.
I do. In about 5 minutes, a random name will pop up.
And then he was with Matt Pivito, Mustang Music Group, and they were in downtown Dallas.
Yes, they were.
Remember they had that office down there? Did you ever go down there?
Yes, I did actually go down there a couple of times.
Yeah.
A couple of times.
Troy, Matt, I felt like I'd arrived. Because most agents I have, quote unquote, are working out of their closet
right.
with a cell phone.
Exactly.
And they sleep till noon.
Boy, Pritchett, I mean, for Troy, you'd have to go downtown and get on an elevator.
Pay for parking? I know. Yeah. There's a guy in the lobby.
Crazy.
Like opening the door.
Was it Lone Star Music down there too?
They had an office up there. It was Pivito, Johnson, and Chad Rainey.
Totally. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Lone Star Music was up there.
That's right.
There was one little room with every Texas Music CD, you know.
They were
all
stacked.
The Mark David Manders money could buy was in
that
room.
They were stacked stem to stern in there.
So Rainey was in there. It was just the... Yeah, so Troy was booking my band. He also booked... Mark David Manders, and booked Macon Grayson. I was always a little jealous because Troy's kind of a rocker.
He is
Macon,
a rocker.
Macon Grayson, of course, just being a rootsy.
Phil, you're a rocker.
Well, I'm a rocker,
you're
I guess,
rocker.
You know. Yeah, loved Macon Grayson. And the first time I heard of Macon Grayson a lot was playing really in the West Texas. Man, we'd go to like the Blue Light in Lubbock.
Yeah.
And, man, the Golden Light in Amarillo, where you guys were just legends. Everybody goes, I said, man, who does good here? And I'd name all the usual suspects. Man, you bring in whoever, Ragweed. Yeah, they do all right. So, man, you're Macon, man. That's the show you got to go to out here. If you want to go to the Golden Light and have a hell of a time, Macon Grayson comes through here. And there was, autographed drum heads on the wall of the Blue Light and some very some framed posters in the
man,
Blue Light. And Lubbock. What was it about West Texas for you guys?
Okay, so the funny thing about West Texas, so the very first time we ever went out there, was a buddy of ours was in a fraternity at Texas Tech, and we kind of made a venture out there and made some friends. And we ended up playing at the Golden Light years ago. Actually, Roger was one of the guys, Roger Krager,
yeah.
Troy was booking, was on the bill.
Played out there, yeah.
In Amarillo at the Golden Light. We played a show, and the guy that booked it liked us a lot. His name's Arcadio.
Mm-hmm.
And we kept going back and going back, and it was 10, then it was 15, then it was 20, then it was 23, then it
was, right.
31. And then all of a sudden we showed up, and the place was full one night. And they accepted us. And
yeah.
It's the very last place. If you'd asked me from the start when we started playing like rock, when we really got loud, where
your music
would
be well received.
I was stereotyping them and would think these guys won't like what we do because we're just kind of a little off to the left of the norm in the in this biz.
Right. Yeah.
The Texas music world. So.
Oh, but you guys were just beloved out there.
They took to it and they liked it.
To this day,
it.
You are. I mean,
and they liked it and they got into it. And I think it was just because. We were a little different, and they're like, hey, all right, a little different's okay with us out here. So they got behind it. They really, really did.
So what was the first Macon Grayson, the real release, first record you guys made?
Uneasy was the first real record.
The Red One, that was y'all's first album?
We had done a record before that with Ray Wiley Hubbard. We had done
that
but actually...
Wiley Hubbard, who named the band,
Ray
is that
named
correct?
The band, actually,
now, what's
yeah.
that story? Because I've heard that as well.
Oh, there's really not much... Honestly, this is the truth. There's not much to the story, but... So we record. Actually, the only member of the band as it is today that was in that first group was me. That was really it.
Okay.
And so we recorded with Paul Piercy and a bunch of really good players that
so
Ray
So this is kind of you had some, you'd
written
some songs.
Yeah, I had some songs, and I had a bass player who used to play with Ray, and there was a connection.
Uh-huh.
So, we went down there, and, Ray, we were Ray's first record that he produced.
That he produced, yeah.
So he was wanting to do some production. We needed we needed somebody to put a band together, basically.
Right.
And so he did, and we recorded it. And at the end of it, he's like, what are we going to call
the name
this record?
Of this? What's the name of this group?
The Buddy Huffman Project, whatever.
Right.
And I said, man, no, my name is... There's already been a Buddy, and he was really great.
Mm-hmm.
And, there doesn't need to be another one.
Also big in Lubbock.
That's right. That's right.
Maybe that's part of your appeal out there.
Maybe it could be. Simply the name. But the... I just didn't want my name to be the front of the band.
Sure,
so
right.
We're going to have to name this something.
Yeah.
Made lists and lists of stupid names. Just never came up with anything.
Always a tough thing, naming the band.
Yeah.
What a beating.
I went back to Dallas because I was down there recording, and I stayed at his house and all this and that. Calls me like that next Wednesday, and he's like, hey, I got an idea. I said, well, what? Well, what's your idea? He said, what about Macon Grayson? And I go, what does that mean? He goes, I don't know. It just kind of sounded cool. And I was like... Okay.
What was it? Was it taken from like Macon, Georgia, or was it taken from anywhere?
So I asked him. I go, well, what are you talking about, Ray? Yeah. What was the motivation behind it? He goes, well, your songwriting is kind of Southern, and I just started thinking of writers who had Southern names, and I said the name Macon Grayson. That sounded like a Southern writer to me, and I thought
it does.
Okay. Well,
so Macon Grayson.
So I asked him. I was like, what if people start calling me Macon? He goes, I don't know. Yeah, we hadn't really thought that far ahead, but
right.
I told a few friends, and they're like, what does it mean? I said, I don't know. It
but Ray Wiley Hubbard said it, man. So it
must be true.
It.
I mean,
it must
Ray,
be good.
Yeah, and, I mean, Ray's the man.
That's right. So that was your first kind of outing. So the next one was when you had the guys.
That was when the band at kind of as you see
And the original incarnation
now.
Of Macon Grayson around that time was you and Harley Husbands.
Me and Harley and Pete Falcone. And Badger. Play the bass.
Say the Badger and the Falcon.
A lot of good
nicknames. Buddy, Badger, Falcon.
Rock and Roll Wildlife Preserve. And Harley.
You think Harley's a nickname, but that's the actual guy's name.
That's his real name.
Was the first time we played together Sons of Herman Hall?
Probably so.
That's probably right.
Yeah.
Y'all always did some great covers. Didn't I get up and play like Won't Get Fooled Again or something? No, what'd y'all do? Y'all did a Who's
Song.
Bob O'Reilly.
Yeah, it was Bob O'Reilly. Yeah, yeah. What it was. That's right. That's exactly what it was.
Out here in the fields.
Hey, man, get up and got a windmill.
That's right.
Got windmill a windmill on that one.
Do the scissor kicks off
the
stage.
I know you did. I know you windmilled at least once.
I think I tried to.
I saw you did.
I used to practice the windmill.
You have to.
Till my hands bled in
you
high school. Standing in front of the mirror, swinging my arm around.
Yeah.
That was my version of learning how to play the guitar. I wasn't sitting there playing scales. I was jumping off my bed and swinging my arm around.
Yeah. Your mom walk in the bathroom, there's blood all in the sink. She's like, what's wrong with you?
Yeah, dude, I'd look at my guitar, there'd be like blood on the guitar.
There's little
bits
of skin on the string.
Yeah, like, I just go, man, I'm rocking out.
Sorry, I didn't mean to get gross.
Learning how to do it. So Making Grayson was born. Well, man, that first record, did y'all do that at Panhandle House?
Yeah.
I that was the first time I'd become aware of them. Panhandle House is a real nice studio in Denver.
Yeah.
Got a lot of great gear. God, everything I've heard out of there sounds just fantastic.
The engineer is really the engineer Eric and his brother run the place, and Eric is a phenomenal engineer.
Yeah,
I'm a fan of his.
Yeah, yeah, I know that Rodney Parker and 50 Peso.
Rodney's done a record up there.
Record up there.
Eli Young.
And man, that stuff sounds really great. I was impressed with that. So y'all's first big record y'all did up there.
Yeah.
Uneasy, is that what it's called?
That's right. That's right.
Uneasy was the first, and that was about the time I really became aware of you
guys.
That's
right.
Y'all had that album and playing a lot of shows. And man, we had a couple wild shows at, College Station.
Yeah, man, that was your place. We would come down there. It was always, you know, man, I hope we get to open for Pritchett. And so we'd always lobby.
Yeah.
This is no kidding. We'd always lobby because we'd come down there, man, and those places were full up.
Yeah,
and we would get in there, and
upstairs
they're like,
at Fitzwillie's.
And
or something.
You know, your fans are cool with us. They're like, all right, this is a rock and roll band. If it was a rock and roll band, all right, we'll give this a shot.
Yeah,
you know, so I always thought we had great shows down there.
We did great shows. I think y'all did a North by Northgate with us.
Yeah, that's right.
Festival,
that's right. You know, that's right. We did one with you there.
God, Macon was noted, and I hope I'm not stretching the truth or embarrassing you here, but noted for staying out late, going all night kind of deal.
Yeah.
Like you never just played the show and kind of went back to the hotel. You know,
it's like
we're playing the show. You guys got on stage with us. It just went on and on. And then someone's got a keg at some house down the street. We all went over there.
That's right.
And you wake up, and you're just there. You're having a great time. You're playing cards. It's 6 in the morning. And you're like, God, what is going on? We got to play tomorrow. What am I doing? Oh, man, it's probably good that I got out of that phase of it with you guys. When I did. Started having kids. I was exhausted.
We had fun. Well, those Aggies not a party.
And Corpus. Did some shows in Corpus, maybe? Firehouse.
We did a show at the Firehouse. We've done
several shows
with Troy. Two shows in Surf Club. I want to say two shows.
Right.
I even think we may have played a festival with you. You were playing later on the bill, but
that's right. Yeah,
I think we did a little festival out down there with you.
Well, we shared. Troy Johnson was booking you and us. And that's how.
Yeah,
it goes.
So it always was kind of cool.
A lot of leverage having each other on the bill.
And that band of yours was tight, right? And tight.
Yeah.
Those guys were fun to hang out with.
Yeah, man. We had, of course, Ryan Lynch on bass,
Jason Stolle
on drums.
Stolle and Lynch.
Some great wild times, man. Back when we had the office in downtown Dallas where our agent was. Booking us all over the state, staying out all night. Oh, greatness, man.
Yeah.
Greatness. Recently Macon Grayson has, after Troy wasn't booking us anymore. You guys kind of went your way. We went our way. I moved to I was back from Nashville, but, you know, kind of spacing out, doing our own stuff. And I started becoming aware of Macon Grayson, people talking about you guys, you know, playing out of state. People go, man, I looked at this stuff online, man. They're going here. They're going to Kansas City. They're going to, all over the country, Alabama. And so I want to catch up with what you guys have been doing lately. We'll hear about what's new in Macon Grayson world coming up next.
Is fresh, but even my brain's best effort will never do you justice in the flesh, and your infinite caresses still add up to less than I can take.
Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It's Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast. We are here at Trinidad World Recording Studios. Email us at phil@philpritchard.com. Let us know what you need to hear discussed on the podcast. Or call me, 817-733-5256. Come record at Trinidad or book Phil Pritchard and the full band. Well, our guest here today is the great Buddy Huffman from Macon Grayson, everyone's favorite rock band, Rock and Roller. Well, our last segment, we were talking about the background Buddy and I have together, sharing booking, sharing management with the great Troy Johnson, a character in his own right, the subject of maybe a whole podcast by himself.
Yeah, Troy, yeah.
Troy, who's worked for Eli Young for a long time.
He's done some stints.
Roger Kreger for a long time.
Yep.
He worked for that Nashville
went
star
to Nashville
guy.
Nashville for a while.
Yeah, yeah, he's been everywhere.
Troy's done some stuff.
Yeah, so we got to get him in here to talk about some of that old stuff. That'd be a good time. Talking about Troy, talking about playing a lot of shows. Like we said at the end of the last segment, that I became aware of Macon recently, just you know, playing out of state. People running into him in Kansas. Kind of also the full band. We've been playing in Chicago and Illinois and North Carolina. I don't know.
Absolutely.
Crossing around, and in more than a couple of instances, someone says, "Oh, I know Macon Grayson goes up there," or a friend of mine saw them play somewhere. How'd that come to bat? Was that kind of a conscious thing? Y'all said, of course, you're probably like me, a rock band. Sometimes it is hard playing in Texas a lot, not being a country band. Hard finding a lot of places to play.
It can. We've had some strange looks over the years from club owners and mm-hmm. people like that, and that's they've never been mean, and they've always been cool about it. But
well, I've always pointed this out that a band like the Old 97s
right.
or something. You really look at who's a great Texas rock and roll band. You really look at their touring schedule, man. They play like Dallas,
right?
Austin,
right.
And their next night is in like Phoenix.
Right.
They don't play. you got to play the kind of Amarillo, Lubbock.
Right.
You can hit some of these middle rural markets, so to speak. But really, a lot of rock bands really don't play there at all. I mean, it is hard to get booked and stay busy just in Texas by yourself. You're playing rock and roll.
Yeah, it can. Well, because a band like us sort of falls in a strange middle ground because we're really not like rock enough, like heavy rock enough to play, some of the blacklight rooms, things like that. We're just
right.
not loud enough to do that, and that's
right.
not what we are.
Right.
And by the same token, we're not really country enough for a lot of places. So, it does make it a little harder to find venues to really get behind what you're doing. There's a lot of them out there. There really are. So that's not to be unfair. But because we fall in a strange place on the musical genre spectrum,
right.
it does become a little difficult. If this was the 1970s, no one would give a shit what we were.
Right, right, right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it can be that way. And outside of Texas, it's a little different. Like the rock and roll rooms are a little different.
Of the Midwest or somewhere.
Of the Midwest or even the Southeast, they're a little different. I'll tell you one thing that's way different.
What's
and
that?
We didn't realize this until we really got out on tour is that, in Texas, we get used to playing 2 hours a night. You'll start at 10:30 or 11, and you'll play to 1.
How long do you play? 9 to 1, you're like, oh,
Yeah, you just play these long marathon sets, and they're a lot of fun, and you get to play everything and really, let the string out. But
right.
you get to these other places, like, okay, you're going to be playing second on this bill, and you're going to be playing 11 to 11:45.
Yeah.
We're like, 45 minutes?
Yeah.
So then you're looking at your set list, like, what do we do?
Right.
Which ones of these are our greatest hits?
yeah.
You start asking that
what
question.
What are the ones we can just not do without?
So that's one real strange difference. But, it's just, Texas has its own kind of little musical world. It's very cool in a lot of ways, but it's very different from what kind of goes on, I think, out there in a lot of other places.
The same things that make it unique and special are also the things that make it, challenging.
Different,
In a lot of ways. And I've found that certainly to be true. But where are we? We were talking about before we even started talking today. What are some of those out of state markets that you found maybe you've been well received or there's kind of a cool – you were talking about some rooms in Kansas, a lot of colleges and cool places up there.
Yeah, Kansas has been – we've always played Oklahoma.
I remember y'all always killed in like Norman,
man,
at the old Red Dirt. That was like y'all's biggest place,
Norman,
wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, right. Norman, Oklahoma. This bar owner up there named Tim O'Brien's really a big supporter of the band and
mm-hmm.
would put us in there on game days. So you play the night, so they would have like a 7 o'clock game.
Right.
And the place
Sooner
was right.
Sooner Nation.
Sooner Nation, man.
Loved Macon Grayson.
Oh, Lordy. And they they would have, you know, the ball games would be maybe half a mile from where this place was. So everyone would be walking back.
Yeah.
And the place, these places would just fill up because they always won the game. So everyone was always in the mood to party and have a good time.
It was the Red Dirt Cafe.
The Red Dirt Cafe.
We played there several times. He didn't give us the game nights, though. I guess y'all got that.
We got.
Well, that was yet another place I went to where just like, man, Macon is the big band here. They had that little stage by the front door.
That's right.
Small cafe.
That's right.
And, man, in a great, Norman's a great, great college town.
Yes, it is.
It's just got that little square
campus corner.
Two or three streets.
Called, yeah.
Nothing but just poster shops and,
that's right. And that's
bars and
pizza.
Deli and pizza.
Pizza's by the slice.
Oh, my gosh. It's just so great to be
it
there.
It was cool. It was a very cool area. And that, and
yeah.
Because game nights had so much foot traffic, we just had a chance to be exposed to a lot mm-hmm. of people. And suddenly,
right.
we played there in the spring after football season was over, and we didn't expect anything at all.
Yeah, yeah.
Thinking, well, we'll probably our 20 or 30 fans who really dig us, you know. But I mean, we walked up there and the place was full and there was a line out the door and we're just like,
yeah, what is going on? We're huge in freaking Oklahoma.
We did it.
We played a deal with we opened for Jack Ingram there one time
at the Red Dirt.
The Red Dirt Ingram, yeah. And he was already like doing pretty well, and I mean he had a Bucca Allen with him,
yeah,
playing, and he traveled with a full Hammond B3 organ with a Leslie. On that little stage.
I don't know how they did that.
So my toes were just hanging off the front of the stage, opening for Jack, trying not to bump into the organ. Oh, man. But that was kind of, so y'all kind of been in Oklahoma for a while.
Yeah, so naturally progressed north to Kansas. And, you know, we've played up there. I'd say we've gone around there about three or four times. And in Wichita, I think we've got a little group going.
Yeah. Is there a cool place to play there in Wichita?
You know, several of the places that were really cool there have shut down.
Is that right?
John Barleycorns was one place where we had played several times.
John Barleycorn must die.
And then there was another place called, name escapes me, the Rack 'em Up or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of
Cune Rack.
Man, it was kind of a pool hall slash sports bar slash music venue. It was kind of interesting.
Catch all.
Yeah, but it was cool. And we played this little tiny place called Kirby's up in Wichita. It was just an absolute blast. But that guy died.
Ah.
Sadly. So
it's starting to take on a Spinal Tap.
Wichita's starting to
he died
to
actually.
Take on a yeah. But you know, Lawrence, Kansas is a, Manhattan, Kansas is a bunch of fun.
Where do y'all play there?
At a place called Auntie Mae's.
Is that cool? Now we've played Manhattan at the Longhorn.
The Longhorn,
kind of country
down
place,
the street from Auntie Mae's,
which is it's okay, but it's kind of a country bar. We've played with Craig a couple times.
No, Auntie Mae's is so you enter the bar at street level, and then you go down a floor into a basement.
Basement bar.
So it's a basement rock and roll bar, and it is all kinds of fun.
Yeah, yeah.
It's and so there's an area. It's not really a stage. It's more of an area
where the band stays.
A region where the band sits. And then there's like this, I don't know, maybe
you're going to play in this area.
Maybe
in
two paces of space.
Right.
And then all the scaffolding for the stairs that go down into the basement.
Right.
So as the band, you're playing straight into the stairs.
Yeah.
But the last time we played there, we had a really good crowd. In this.
Yeah.
I mean, and when I say good crowd, in a place like this, 80, 90 people is stuffed.
Can fit in there. Yeah, yeah, right.
So we're playing in there, and all of a sudden, man, the place is full, and there's people on the stairs, like peering around and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was the coolest thing ever.
They have a little PA. Do you bring
just
your own?
They have their
sticks.
Own little PA, but you just, you know, your amp, you don't mic amps, you don't do
anything.
Oh, yeah,
you don't do anything, yeah.
Yeah, it's just a hot, sweaty corner where the band stands.
You do, and the drums, everything. You just have the vocals and the
PA,
that's
There's a pole right in the middle of the stage.
Yeah? or the area, the vicinity.
The area, right.
The area has a pole.
Right, so it's like Harley's on the far right, then the drummer's sort of there, pole, me, and then Fred kind of stands up on this little area up on the right. It's almost kind of 70s style where you have layers of staging.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, Fred is like one step up.
Like that thing you do.
Very much.
Kind of a
Fred's 60s. Like one step up. But the place was just, you know, we only played like 13 or 14 songs, and it was just the coolest hour that we'd had in a good long time.
That's great,
it
man.
It was fun, man.
Because
so, really
I've been looking, Manhattan is a really cool town.
It is a cool town.
You know what's great about Manhattan?
Huh.
Is, or, I mean, all
Gumby's
this Midwest.
Pizza.
Yes. And, well, there's another place. What's that other place around? It's a diner and a Mexican food place.
Man, I don't know.
The Tiki Hut?
Oh.
Have you been in there?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it was pretty good. But your dollar goes a long way
in
Kansas. Am I right or am I wrong?
Right.
Dude.
You're right.
We go in there to play in Effingham, Illinois, and Champaign, and
we
Kansas. Manhattan. Gosh, man. I order my hamburger and fries. They're like, that'll be $2.98. I'm just like, what? Or $3.50 or something? Yeah. I'm always amazed when I go up there how less expensive it is than the DFW area, you know, or Houston or
yeah,
I mean, you know,
they're definitely yeah,
kind of nice. A hotel room is like $45 plus tax. It's like $48. There's no
right, exactly
17%. Road tax, what do they have in
Texas? Surcharge
now?
On the surcharge.
Yeah, golly.
We're
like
surcharging the surcharge.
$69. Now. What's the total? Just that'll be $104. Well, what do you?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Well, man, the Midwest, man. So where else in the Midwest does
so
good? Champagne, you said you played?
We have played. We played Champagne for the very first time this last go around.
Did y'all play at the High Dive? Or?
We played at Bentley's Pub.
Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
And it was a lot of fun. It's just a cool little. It's just a little pub where they put a band in the corner. And
so these kinds of places, man, they kind of have walk-in traffic usually. I mean, it's not like a big hard ticket type venue
yeah,
kind of deal.
No. I mean, anytime, I mean, if as a band, just, and this is, you know, you're talking about, you know, band, like interior band consideration.
Sure.
You know, one of the things that I've always thought is a good idea for any band that's going to a new town is that unless you're on like a big tour with other bands and things like that.
Right.
You want to find a place where they don't charge cover,
yeah,
where they'll pay you off the bar, you know, or give you a free meal or whatever.
Right.
And just go play that show because.
Or maybe like a $2, just a low, low cover.
$2 cover, yeah, something that's
bucks.
Reasonable, you know. Right. Going to a town for the first time and asking people to pay $5-$10 is just, it's not good business.
No, you're not going to get anything. You know? I mean, unless you have considerable radio play.
Well, I was
going to
say, unless,
like
you're, unless you're on a big tour, you've got a bunch of radio play, or there's some kind of like commercial push behind
right,
it.
Right, right, right.
Then, you know, if you're just your touring rock band that's just getting going, you got to find a place that people are going to actually be.
Yeah, that's already.
you know,
we talked about this in.
If you want to rob a bank, you want to make money.
That's right.
What the money is, go to the bank. Right?
In past podcasts, we talked about that. When I started going a lot, yeah, a lot, all the Texas venues were like that.
Yeah.
The Firehouse, the Surf Club, it was like, oh, man, we charge like $3. And, man, every Friday and Saturday night, it's packed anyway, no matter who's in here. Port David's, and man, over the years, man, gradually in the last 10 years, these bands, their guarantees go up, and the ticket prices have gone up. It's just kind of like, man, you know. And so now we play the Firehouse, and man, we might as well be playing like a theater or something. I mean, it's just it's a hard ticket venue. I mean, it's not like, you know, but you wonder if it was just like $2 or $3 if you just have 600 people in there. I don't know, but
yeah.
So we can do a good little crowd, but it is $10, and yeah, you never just walk in off the street anymore. But I know those places do exist in Texas, but in our little Texas music thing, they're few and far between. There's really not a whole lot of things that cater to that stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, it's. I mean, the whole thing's evolved. I mean, it was, you know, a really big money thing.
Yeah.
For a while, the whole Texas music industry.
Right, right.
And, you know, I think that...
Got expensive, you know.
It did get expensive. And that's, you know, that's how things evolve. And, you know, who knows what happens in the future. But there'll eventually be another earthquake in this deal. And, you know, the people will start looking for the next one. And
we've already had it, haven't we? I don't know.
Happen.
I mean,
it'll happen.
Is Adair still there?
Absolutely. Adair's won't leave.
Now, that's a place where Adair... that's a place where you have no cover, pass the tip
that's
jar,
right.
Play all
pass
night,
the tip
free
jar,
burgers.
You know, everybody goes there, you get... You know,
I was distressed to play. I played Adair's one time. Had a great show. Actually had Michael Terabay from Pat Green's band played bass with me at that gig, I remember.
Uh-huh.
Do you know him?
I do.
T-Bay.
I know who
he
is, yeah.
He just kind of picked up a gig with us one night and had a great time in there. And I was distressed that we earned far more money at Adair's than we did at a lot of our quote-unquote marquee-type shows, you know? It's like, hey, Adair's, we're going to pass the tip jar. We're going to lose our shirts at this thing. But, you know, it was on like a Saturday night. You couldn't get in there. And we'd already been playing at Port David's and the Gypsy Tea Room and stuff. You know, we already had a kind of a crowd that we could charge, you know, that would pay $5 or $10 to see us maybe. So I said, man, Adair's, you had a show there. But a great time. But it was, man, it was people appreciated us playing there, man. It was no cover. And everybody came, and it was a lot of fun. And it found me for a long time going to Pivotal. I was like, man, what are some other places like that where just, man, there's no cover or a small cover where we can just get people in there. And yeah, we have some diehards up front, but maybe there's a lot of people there who can see us for the first time that we're not in front of. I find that's difficult. That's hard to find now, man, because even when we go to these, like, Woody's here in Fort Worth or somewhere, man, they're hey, man, we're charging, you know, $8, $10, $12. Just like, geez, you know, I mean, only the most ardent diehard fans are going to drive out here to see us play. And you're playing to the converted.
Right.
Unless you have 500 converted or 100. Right. Or, you know, it's tough to cover your nut and come out on top. But
right. Well, you know, I mean, when the ticket prices went up, I mean, it became a business. And I think in a lot of ways, venues like that, you know, a venue like that is more likely to take a chance on a new band that really has never had a chance before. Because for them, there's no, you know, big guarantee and big, you know, contracts and nonsense that can get in the way of a good relationship. So those bands, you know, that's a nice place for them to try to get going because they'll take a chance. There's no investment by the bar. They're like,
that's right. That's
hell,
right.
If you bring people and they drink beer, that's fine with me.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that'd be my advice to, I mean, you know, when I lived in Austin right after I got out of school, you know, mid-90s or early 90s when I was in college down near Austin, man, we'd go to see bands on 6th Street all the time.
Right.
The Black Cat Lounge, you know, legendary place.
Yeah.
But, man, it was like on Thursday nights, we'd go see Soul Hat or Joe Rockhead or somebody.
Absolutely.
For like $2. Dollar Patch Blue Ribbon at the bar and free hot dogs. You know, I could tell everybody. I mean, it was just packed. And those bands came out on those nights. I mean, it was like, but there was just no. Our early shows at Fitzwillie's in College Station, where y'all played us, did a similar deal. They would say, man, we'll give you just the bare minimum guarantee, like a couple $100.
Right.
But I'll tell you what, we'll charge everybody $2.
Right.
And we'll just give you the door also.
Right.
So, man, I mean, we were just getting started. Man, for $2, people came in. We played 2 hours, just like you said, as long says, 2-3 hours. And we'd fill that patio up by the end of the night.
That's right.
And hey, man, here's the two from the bar. And hey, man, we had another 200 walk in. Here's another $400. You know, it became a palatable trip to make from Austin and to feel like you're growing your audience.
Right.
Well, I feel like now, you know, hey, man, I can get you into this club, but, you know, the hump is $1,200 and you're getting X guarantee and tickets are $8 in advance. I'm just kind of like, dude, Well, I've got friends of mine who always want to open bars or venues, like, and they want to do live music, and that's what I just go, man, just have no cover or like $2-3,
right?
And just so it's full, just get people in there,
right?
Don't sit here and say, hey, man, we're booking this dude, you know, he needs a $5,000 guarantee, so we're gonna charge $15. I'm like, dude, you're dead. That's not, I mean, that's not gonna work.
No,
so I'm intrigued by a lot of these Midwest type places y'all play. There's a built-in crowd, you know, I guess you'd say.
I mean, it's the difference between getting started and being established. And
That's right.
And, you know, if you're getting started, then you have to think, you know, like a hungry starter. You have to think of the hungry high school kid out throwing his flyers around. And you have to think, you know, like a bank robber. If you want to get money, go where the money is. Go to the bank.
Yep.
If there's no people there to hear you, then there's absolutely no point in doing it.
Yeah.
And so that's what we do, and that's how we got started in all of our touring, through the Southeast, through, you know, out in California, out West, out, you know, in the upper Midwest. You go somewhere where you know there's people, and there's networks of bands that talk to each other. Like, I mean, there's other similar types of bands in the Midwest, and, you know, you make a friend, go play a show with them, have them down to play
in Columbia tomorrow night. Oh, where do y'all play there? Oh, man, talk to Joe over at wherever.
And Mojo's. It turns
like, oh, okay, cool. You know,
if you find the right kinds of bands and the right kinds of people out there, you know, you can get yourself a nice co-op going where everyone's kind of helping everyone and telling them, hey, don't play that venue. Do play that venue, you know, because that's the people you want to listen to is the bands.
That's right. That's right.
And so it winds up being really cool, and that's how we built a little tour base, you know, really through Kansas, Missouri, the whole Midwest, whatever, Nebraska. Right. And, Iowa and Illinois and places like that. You know, that's how you build your tour base. And through the Southeast is the same way. You know, go place college towns, meet some bands,
and
swap shows. You know, we played in Athens, Georgia this last go around. Had the time of our lives.
What'd y'all play there?
At Tasty World.
Yeah, Tasty World.
That venue.
Boy, now that is a rock and roll town.
That's a rock and roll town.
We talk about Norman had the great square. Athens is maybe one of the great college environments. I did a conference down there when I was living in Nashville. I was on a panel down there.
A panel?
For AthFest.
You were a panelist?
Yes, I was a panelist.
Oh, you went down for AthFest?
Yes, for AthFest. I was there.
That's the real deal, man. AthFest is the real deal.
Well, my friend of mine was a music industry attorney, and he was on the panel. So, hey, Phil's an independent musician guy. They go, great, we'll put him next to you with a card in front, fielding questions.
Did you keep the card?
Yeah, I got it somewhere.
I knew you did.
It's a plaque more than a card.
Dude, those are awesome.
So yeah, dude, we went to hit Tasty World, hit the 40 watt, you just walked in, yeah, saw bands.
Yeah.
And then we went to the next morning, dude, we just went to vintage shops and vinyl stores and poster stores and music stores and coffee shops and just sushi. We worked the square. I was just like, dude, I could live in Athens, Georgia.
Man, it's a trip.
Did you go to the REM Museum?
No, we
didn't. They have an REM Museum there.
But I'll tell you a funny REM story.
Yeah?
So when I was...
REM, the great rock band.
Well, yeah.
Of course, punchline these days, it disgusts me to say.
People are like, oh, really? They do.
I'll tell you, was there a
You're
greater...
Unhappy.
Was there a greater, more artistic, just drunk... kick-ass artistic rock band than REM in the 80s, I mean, you know, coming up.
No, man.
Yeah, I mean, they're the root of a lot of this
stuff. I bought that new CD, the IRS years, or I guess it's not new, it was a couple years, maybe a year or two ago. And, man, I forgot how much great stuff they did.
Mm.
And they did some, stuff I consider just straight up and down country.
Yeah, oh,
really,
yeah.
Really cool. Don't Go Back to Rockville.
Don't Go Back to Rockville. South Central Rain. Yeah, like Reckoning in Tables of the Reconstruction.
Yeah, man.
And, man, even like, Life's Rich Pageant had a...
Yeah.
I Am Superman, that song, and Begin, and I mean, I was a big REM fan.
Dude, well, so
came out of Athens, Georgia.
Yeah, when I was in college, my folks lived in Atlanta, mm-hmm. and I worked in Atlanta with, mm-hmm. I was a waiter at Olive Garden, I think, something like that.
You think?
Tchotchkes.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever, flingers. So, anyway, a couple guys that were also working summer there went to University of Georgia, and they're like, "Hey, man, we're going to go down to Athens here." One night after work and just, go see some bands and hang out. And I'm like, oh, okay, that sounds really great. So we get down there, and I've forgotten what record this was, but REM was there in Athens playing a show under some pseudonym.
Oh, is that right?
Like the Chickasaw Mud Puppies or something.
Yeah.
And we happened upon it. I mean, we walked them, near the 40 watt, and the place is freaking mauled.
Well, man, they all still
live
there.
And they were in there playing.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous.
Wow.
And that's how I got introduced to Athens. And so anyway, we went back there for the first time as a band back here in April.
Yeah.
And just had the time of our lives. We played upstairs at Tasty World. We played, the upstairs club.
Yeah.
Downstairs, there was how do I describe this? A drag show in reverse.
Uh-oh.
Lesbians dressing like men. And they were and it was like it was like the Birdcage in reverse.
Wow.
It was amazing.
And
so
you guys were on the bill, or upstairs.
So this band played first, and then we played in the middle, and then a headliner played.
Mm-hmm.
So while the headliner was playing, we wanted to go downstairs and kind of see what was going on.
Yeah.
And we walked down there, and we went in the club downstairs,
mm-hmm.
and it was like watching the Birdcage, except with women.
Wow, dude.
It was unbelievable.
That is bizarre.
Totally bizarre. at that point, you're just like... Wow.
Yeah.
Athens
is weird that you have there's not a more southern town out there. Yeah. But then there's also this weird element to it, man.
There is. It's kind of very edgy. It's very refreshing to see people just doing what they do.
Yeah.
I think it's cool.
Were the Black Crows Athens? Were they more Atlanta? Weren't they from down there?
The Crows were from Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah. But they were down there from that
same
region.
Yeah, I mean, they were all kind
of... The B-52s, of course.
Of course, the B-52s.
Athens. There's a little, it's just a little... It's about the size of a little coffee shop or something on the square there. Or they used to have a few years ago. It was the Athens Music Museum.
Yeah.
But they had old REM set lists in there. And, of course, I was in there really checking it out. And some of Peter Buck's guitars and stuff. But, oh, man. What else, man? What's another market you like out there?
Oh, geez.
Where else could Phil Pritchett and the full band infiltrate on the back of Nathan Grayson's hard work?
The West Coast. We went out to the West Coast for the first time last year. And, I had one of the most interesting comments made to me since we've really been out on tour. You always kind of odd things happen to you. Like,
sure.
We were in a Wendy's once. I forgot where we were. And some guy walked up to us and asked us if we were a rock band. And we said, yeah.
You guys in a band or something?
And he gave us $20 and told us to go to church.
Really?
I'm not kidding. He pulled $20 out of his wallet. And he was just being nice. He was just proselytizing, doing his thing.
That's right, man.
And handed us $20. He's like, don't forget the performance Jesus puts on for you every day.
There you go, man.
He handed us a $20 bill. And I was just
sent you
stunned.
On your way. Yeah.
And we got in the van and nobody talked for like 10 minutes. We could not process what had just happened.
How long were y'all out there? Did y'all go up and down the coast?
We went out there for about a 2-week trip in total.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we played up and down the coast a bit. And in L.A., you know, we played at the Hotel Cafe, which is famous. The Hotel Cafe is just the coolest thing. And it's right there in Hollywood.
Right.
There's speakeasies next door. There was a speakeasy where, what's that guy's name? He's on Two and a Half Men. Charlie Sheen.
Oh, yeah, Charlie Sheen.
Charlie Sheen was in hanging out at the speakeasy next door, we found out.
Yeah.
Go over and have a $20 martini.
Sweet.
Anyways, LA. we play this place, the Hotel Cafe in Hollywood. It's very famous. I mean, the best of the best have played there. And we're sitting there after the show, and this guy walks up to the merch table, and he buys a CD.
Yeah.
He's like, he goes, so y'all are from Texas, huh? I said, yeah. He goes, there's a lot of bands out here that try to do what you guys kind of do. I was like, oh, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, and I think the thing I like about you the most is that y'all seem to know how to do it.
Yeah, right.
And I thought that was really funny. You know, they, I guess out in L.A., they just don't have a lot of really authentic Southern rock. And
Yeah, that's probably right.
And I think that they really looked at us as, you know, like just being from Texas or being from the South or somewhere that's not California.
Right.
Gave us some measure of authenticity, you know,
that
they seemed to respond to. And so we had a really great time out there. We played a great acoustic gig up in Ventura, California.
Yeah.
It was a cool trip. Really had a good time. I had some friends out there that we stayed with. So
cool deal, man.
Stayed with a guy who was an actor, a bit actor, in No Country for Old Men.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. The great, great Coen Brothers film.
I got hit on by a cross-dresser. It was a full trip, man.
Listen to all these cross-dressing stories for Macon
Grayson.
It was
a full trip.
Good grief. Well, man, traveling the country with Macon Grayson. There you go, folks.
Traveling the country in a U-Haul.
Well, you know, it's been said a million times before. We talk about just, you know, how in the 90s you start in a band. Why would you ever go to Chicago if you can't get a crowd in Dallas? You would just go, man, you know, why would I travel all the way up there to play for 10 people? I'm going to play for 10 people here.
Well,
no one up there knows me. There's no radio. There's no record store with our stuff in there. Once we leave, it's like we're not even there anymore. Of course, the internet's changed all of that. It's just there's no difference between driving to Corpus and driving to Lincoln, Nebraska.
Right.
If you think there's a sympathetic audience waiting for you in Lincoln, dude, I used to live in Houston. I live here now. We're going to pack this thing out, man, because I go to college up here or whatever.
Right.
Man, we just get in the van and go. And, man, in recent years, some of our most memorable shows, because you are traveling and it's kind of this whole experience kind of thing, have been these kinds of things in North Carolina and Colorado and Chicago. Where you do have a little maybe clump of people who know who you are. And, man, it is just as fun and as profitable and as valid. And you get up there, man, no one has any of Phil Pritchett's, no one's bought Phil Comes Alive, you know, who I play a show here and everyone already has everything who comes to these shows down here for 10 bucks. But, man, you go play some festival and Effingham, Illinois, or something. All of a sudden, people are like, "What's this one, man?" I'm like, "Maria, dude, you don't have that record. Come on, you know." So they just, you're starting over. Yeah. You're getting in front of a whole new group of people, and it's viable. I mean, they get on your email list, and man, they can keep up with you and send you pictures and video. And hey, man, download your albums.
Yeah.
Totally stay in contact. And that was just impossible in the 90s. You're just like, man, unless you have a record deal, you just would never try to pull something like this off. There's no way to do it.
And they say that you got to get famous first before you can be a big hit in your own hometown.
That's right. That's right.
I've always heard that.
Yeah.
So we're gonna go out and try to get famous.
It's hard to be a prophet in your own town. My dad always says. Well, man, next we're gonna come up with, of course, on the last podcast we covered the great "Sky Blue Sky" by Wilco from a year or two ago. Kurt South and myself. Of course, to give some background, some reference to Wilco and Sky Blue Sky, we started talking about Tweety, we started talking about Uncle Tupelo, and that led us into talking about Jay Farrar, and I talked about how it took me a while to warm up to Wilco, even though I thought it was cool and everything, but man, did not take me 1 second to warm up to the great Sunvolt when they put out their album Trace.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Trace in the What's on P2's iPod coming up next.
Walking down Main Street, getting to know the concrete, looking for a purpose from a neon sign. I would meet you anywhere, western sun meets the air. We'll hit the road, never looking behind. Nothing greater, nothing more than the traveling hand.
friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. As always, my friends, email me, phil@philpritchett.com, with your questions, topics, ideas for discussions on the podcasts, or to book Phil Pritchett and the full band, or to inquire about recording at Trinidad, or just call me, 817-733-5256. As always, download your Pritchett songs off p2tunes.com for $4 a piece or iTunes. Also, so MakinGrayson.com.
Yes.
MakinGrayson.com.
And we have my books and face Twitters and space boxes.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, all that stuff.
Makin' Grayson, a band of the era, man.
That's
Buddy
right.
Huffman is here. We've been talking about Makin' Grayson, past, present, and future. Well, I told Buddy coming in today, we were talking about the What's on Phil's iPod, the vault section of our shows, where I let the guests kind of choose maybe a direction, an album to discuss. And it's no question that Makin' Grayson, they have been heavily influenced by, they're out there touring in the Midwest a lot, kind of that Midwest, Southeast, Southern rock. But songwriter, intelligent, savvy, but at times bludgeoning, at times, beautiful and melodic.
You need to write that down.
I know. Well, you know, there you go. You can use that in your press clippings on your MySpace page.
I will. In bright, bold letters on the front page.
Well, I told, but we did, to discuss Sky Blue Sky by Wilco last week. We got back into some kind of Uncle Tupelo history.
Yeah.
I don't claim to be an expert, but I know the story, know the songs, the albums. Didn't know a whole lot about Tupelo in the 90s. I had Anodyne and some of that stuff, and loved them. Cool,
great record,
influential
yeah.
band. And then, man, it was around. I don't know when that was. Late 90s.
Middle 90s.
Trace.
Yeah, that was 95, 96.
Okay, right. 95, 96, listening to KGSR, the great station there in Austin. I was living there. And, man, here's Sun Volt. I didn't even know what it was, man, but just walking down Main Street. Here it came. And, man, it was just a pull-the-car-over moment for me.
I
was tear-stained eye. Then you just get the great Windfall. Let the wind take your troubles away.
Yeah, that's the first song I heard. It was on PBS. KERA, the KERA radio station in Dallas. I was listening to that.
Just stunning.
And it came on, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah, it was.
This guy talking about.
You have your run-of-the-mill. KGSR plays a lot of great music, but you know all those artists. You know,
right.
Here's the new John Hyatt. Here's an old Keane tune.
Absolutely.
You know, all the Bob Schneider and Ray Wiley Hubbard you can digest is on KGSR.
Absolutely.
But here comes this... God, man. I mean, they had the steel guitar on there. Just that dark, warm, analog kind of sound of the whole record.
You know what it was to me? It was country music, I think, as the, the Hank Williams Sr., Jimmy Rogers, that kind of Lefty Frizzell, that sort of pure country where there's no,
There's no sensationalism in it.
There's absolutely nothing about it.
No bullshit nostalgia kind of stuff.
Yeah, that is glitz, that is glam. I mean, country music came straight out of the minds of farmers and ranchers and people that were living this rustic kind of life.
Rural life,
it always had a very rustic feel, even though those guys were from industrial towns. What they were saying, is really resonates.
Yeah.
In terms of just the purest country medium, it's just a man talking about his troubles.
That's right.
It's really nothing but what Townes Van Zandt called the blues.
Yeah, that's right.
Quite honestly, that's all that it is. And it was really just the purity of it. You use the right word, the unsensationalism about it that made it so sensational and memorable. And
it was just totally different. It just sounded like it wasn't trying to do anything.
Yeah, but then the crazy thing is you're listening to The Edge or some rock station and suddenly Drown comes on.
Well,
and they say the word Sunvolt, and I'm processing going, okay, wait a minute. Sunvolt I heard on, a KERA show where it sounded very country, and what I just heard was a rock band.
Just bludgeoning, yeah.
Just a rock band, flat-out rock and roll band.
Dude, the intro to that song, is there a better just intro? Just drop it in. Drown.
Guessing game in store. You with me?
Living right is easy. What goes wrong, you're causing it. To drown. Didn't want to turn that way, you're causing it. To drown. Doesn't make a difference now, you're causing it. To drown. Silence knows. Can't drown a heart.
Memorable like the 70s rock. Like they would open with a,
yeah,
with a just killer riff and it's like, yeah. Drown was that way, you know. It was,
yeah,
it's rhythmic. It's cool, but it's also just Marshall head rock.
It's just cannons,
pure Vox rock, whatever you want to call it.
Cannons going off. You know, I mean, we talk about this podcast. We've done several of them now. We get a lot of feedback from people, mostly good, I'm proud to say. But at our worst, I think a lot of guys go, oh, God, you're always talking about albums made in the 70s and stuff like that. And so it's great for us to get to do like Wilco or, you know, Sunvolt's kind of a newer thing. But what I pointed out, or Ryan Adams' Heartbreaker we did recently, you know, not a reasonably recent album.
Yeah.
But it's funny how the one thing those albums all have in common is they are like kind of the 70s albums. I mean,
we'll see,
you have great slow songs, great rockers, and the whole thing kind of speaks to itself.
Yeah.
Whereas just, you know, more like today, the purpose of doing albums, especially country albums, they're looking for those radio hits, man. And so they're not going to waste a track.
And you know what? A lot of people get grief about it, and that's their vision of what they want music to be for them.
Yeah.
You know, and I get it. It's not for me, and it's, you know, I'm not even going to try to speak for you. It may not be for you either, but
you're talking about
just the idea of making music for the sake of making a popular song.
Well, you get 12 songs on those albums. All 12 of them sound like they could be a new hit, and you're like, I know, but it's just it doesn't breathe. There's not a slow song on there, because that's considered, when you're trying to get those country hits, a waste of, you know, why would we do a track with just a mandolin for 5 minutes? And but you do get those on the Ryan Adams or the Wilco and stuff. They make records like that.
You get chances taken, and that's always a good thing. But you know, the thing about it is, like talking about modern rock versus old rock versus whatever. You know, I would say Petty is an influence of yours.
Sure,
you
Yeah.
I mean, I hear it. I mean, I kind of hear that influence in what you do. But you know, put it in this perspective: what if Tom Petty started today? Like, what if they were coming out of Gainesville, Florida today?
Yeah, where would they go?
Do you put them?
Attention, yeah.
I mean, that's one of the great quote unquote rock and roll bands of the 90s, 80s, mm-hmm. you know, 80s and 90s.
Right.
Where do you put them now?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
There's really no place to put them.
Well, they'd have to get signed to like Lost Highway or something.
It's bands like, you know, the Wilcos and the Sunvolts. And they're kind of doing rock and they're sort of the underbelly, the artistic underbelly of what rock and roll really is to me.
Right, right.
And that's, you know, that's when Trace came out, I realized, I'm like, wait a minute. You know, there's not, because up to that point, you're kind of what the radio tells you to listen to, you listen to, and you know what has the most press behind it. The things you see the most are the things you gravitate towards.
That's right. That's
right. But then you find out there's a whole world of rock and roll out there that is completely authentic and unique and cool.
Yeah.
And you know, Sunvolt Trace was that record. It just turned out that it was so good.
Yeah.
That they got big play.
Oh man, on
big
everything.
Play on, and that was a funny thing. You'd hear a song on a KERA or a KGSR on a country-ish, you know, Americana-leaning station, and then you'd turn on The Edge or something like that. And
they got the rockers on there.
There's Drown. And they were everywhere. And it was just, you know, it was a cool moment for rock, I think. That record, I think, was a very cool moment for rock and roll.
I felt a bit, I don't want to say sorry for them. They did have got a lot of attention there. I went and saw them play. It was like a South by Southwest kind of thing at the Austin Music Hall. Man, right when that thing was out there, really big, and they were playing with Lucinda Williams and Junior Brown and some other bands on a bill.
Yeah.
Big show. I'd never seen them. And, you know, it's been said a lot about Jay Farrar that, you know, he's the ultimate, just kind of walks up there, head down, plays the songs, moves off the stage.
Yeah.
And a couple guys I was with who weren't really musicians and weren't like old Tupelo appreciative guys were kind of like, man, you know, they played that Drown and the one with the steel on it, and that was it, you know. He doesn't run around the stage and stuff, but there's a real integrity to that. I remember just feeling a little embarrassed. I said, man, they've kind of got a reputation and a hit that, you know, people who go see them live who just know that one song, they're not going to feel like they've lived up to that sort of reputation.
Does that make sense?
I'm kind of man, they're kind of a small, unassuming band.
In a way, they didn't. You're not getting the show part of the show.
Yeah, they're not going to. Farrar's not going to come out and just, how's everybody doing with a beard?
Right,
just, you know, and run up and down the aisles of the venue like you or I might do.
Right.
But, you know, I felt a little. Man, these guys are kind of thrown into this element here.
Yeah.
They have a big record, some big songs on all different kinds of formats. Yeah. You had country guys, you had these Americana dudes, you had these rock kids in there who wanted to see them. And it was kind of like they were caught a little flat footed or something. I don't know if that's true to say. That was my impression watching them. I was like, man, there's just these guys are just sort of musicians, man. They're not out here, you know, wanting to be on MTV or something.
Yeah, you know, over the years I've seen him, and he's come out of his shell a little bit. And they did a DVD with, I think with the last record, where you could kind of, not the last record, but the record before this one they just put out, the one before that, they put out a DVD with it where they interviewed Farrar.
Oh, yeah?
And talked to him a fair bit. And I think he's just a shy guy.
Yeah, you know, that's what I've always read and heard about him.
I think it's one of those things where, you know, if he were to get up there and kind of act the fool and try to put on a show, I think it would seem, you know, I think it would seem unauthentic.
Yeah,
and I think something like that would backfire. Now, by the same token, I think he should give the audience a little more.
Right.
And I hope he, in the recent past, I've seen him do it. I saw him at ACL a couple of years back, and you know, he kind of let out a little bit for him and talk to the crowd a little bit, you know, not in boisterous, you know, tones or anything like that, but just in a Jay Farrar, very Jay Farrar kind of way.
I think
he's trying to kind of, you know, get a little more connected with the audience, and that's a good thing. But I think he's just a really shy, quiet.
Well, introspective. His lyrics, I mean, all going all the way back to Tupelo and stuff, man. Always been very dark, very introspective, very unassuming to a degree.
Yeah.
Not, again, man, you just hear so many of the country, more mainstream stuff, even this stuff that passes for like Americana, it's a little more than watered down Keith Urban or something, you know, very clever, very nostalgia rich, you know, not that there's anything particularly wrong with that, but it does get boring, and it does sound trite, and it does sound like they're just trying to, you know, I'm in my truck, I got my girl, you know, and it's not covering any new ground lyrically, anything. But Farrar's always breaking new ground lyrically for himself, and it's always very unusual. His poetry is very unusual, but man, what rich images he's got.
Yeah, he really does
lyrically on Trace, especially, man.
Yeah, well, you know, talking about unfair to him, you know, I think the most unfair thing that happened to Sunbolt was the fact that Trace was so good.
Yeah.
When your freshman record is that good,
yeah.
I mean, it just makes it so hard to follow it up.
Well, I saw guys who went and saw them recently. They came here to Fort Worth, and they played Houston, but playing kind of small clubs. I mean, playing for a couple hundred people. You know, just kind of, but still trucking along, sounding great.
Yeah.
They come to the Aardvark, you know, just where we play or whoever. And of course they do. They still do very well. They got a lot of fans out there.
Oh yeah. I was really glad to see Ragweed last year, year before, put Sunbolt on one of their big family jam things.
Yeah,
that was very cool.
That was. I saw that. Yeah.
And it's nice to, you know, that's what I hope is that, you know, like with your podcast and this kind of thing, that, you know, Texas music can be influenced by some other things that are out there, because there's some really good stuff out there.
Well, that's kind of what, you know, we thank everybody listening on RadioFreeTexas.org. As well as philpritchard.com. But, you know, some folks out there who love country and love kind of the rock, and, you know, talk a lot about maybe newer guys who are out there doing that's certainly Ryan Adams or
and the internet,
Hayes Carl. And,
Hayes,
you know,
Carl,
but, man, you look at, like, man, you go back to, like, Sunvolt, Trace. That album was a real starting point, man, because that was that kind of music, that Americana rock and roll.
Yeah.
That, you know, you had, like, McMurtry and guys get a lot of exposure after
it. It's the natural extension of Bruce Springsteen and John Cougar Mellencamp. It's just a more edgy, you know, socially conscious extension of what they do. I mean, the music, if you take the lyrics and stuff out, the music's just straight up and down.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
country, southern, Midwest, rock, whatever you want to call it. But the lyrics, you know, really set him apart, and his voice is obviously very unique. So
yeah. Well, check it out, man. Trace by Sunvolt. It'll just knock you on your ass, dude. It's I don't record. Care. I don't care if you're a country front guy.
Back. All the, even the front stuff that back, never saw the radio.
They loose do, string. Oh, I love that
they
song.
They do a Ron Wood cover. The last song, "You Look So Fine," is an old yeah. Ron Wood, an old is Rolling Stones right? cover. Yeah. I don't know. Well, I don't know if it's Rolling Stones. It could be Faces. Anyway, Ronnie Wood wrote it.
Ronnie Wood wrote it.
Yeah, yeah. He wrote the song, and it's just, it's cool.
Our podcast listeners will know that I met Ronnie Wood one night. So check that out. An old story. Well, buddy, thanks for being here, man. Buddy
hey,
Huffman,
hey.
Go to MakingGrayson.com, man, and
come see
blow
us.
Them up. Man, all y'all are listening all over the country out there, man. Macon gets out there, West Coast, Midwest, East Coast, Southeast, Texas, of course. Playing shows, rocking it out. And making always a great friends with Phil Pritchett and the full band, going all the way back to the Troy Johnson
damn
era,
right.
the late 90s and the early aughts, just playing shows and staying out all night, cherished memories, and we're going to make a lot more before it's all over. But check out MakingGrayson.com, go see him on the road, and also of course go to PhilPritchett.com, download all of our songs. You can buy the drop card now for $20. Off the merchandise site. I'll send it to you. You can download every song we've ever made. I don't know how many that is now, but call us 817-733-5256 or email us phil@philpritchett.com. For Buddy Huffman and Macon Grayson, I'm Phil Pritchett signing off on the podcast. We'll see you guys next week.
Hold on what you can, waiting for the end, not knowing when. May the wind take your troubles away. May the wind take your troubles away. Both feet on